1974.
And now stay tuned for Disability
WEFT
Beat.
WEFT is supported in part by Kevin Elliott.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Kish Pisani, director of the Illinois Association of Microboards and Cooperatives. But first, disability news for the week of August 26, 2019. After the widespread success of state insurance mandates for autism treatment, a grassroots effort is underway to do the same for other developmental disabilities. This summer, Missouri became the third state to pass a law requiring coverage of medically necessary therapy for all children with developmental disabilities. The effort was spearheaded by Robin Schlepp, president of Missouri Disability Empowerment, whose son has a rare genetic disorder that is treated with speech, physical, and occupational therapy. While every state has mandated insurance coverage for autism treatment, which generally grants coverage for applied behavior analysis, or ABA, only a handful of states also include developmental disabilities. New Jersey and Maryland do, and Florida amended its autism mandate to include Down syndrome. Disability advocates say they expect grassroots efforts like Missouri's to spread. Schlepp said she's been contacted recently by parents from seven other states. But autism advocates, who paved the legislative pathway, are urging others to proceed carefully in order to achieve what they need and avoid inadvertently jeopardizing earlier gains. Said Mike Wasmer, director of state government affairs at Autism Speaks, quote, "Their situation is a little bit unique. Unlike autism, which is a clearly defined disorder, the category of individuals that they're trying to expand to includes a variety of different disabilities. That's going to be one of their challenges, to clearly identify what they want," end quote. Under the Missouri law, insurers may still impose caps on the number of annual visits for speech, physical, and occupational therapies, but the caps must be lifted when determined to be medically necessary by the health plan. Instead of creating an entirely new section of statute, the Missouri Autism Mandate Law was amended to include developmental disabilities. As a result, Wasmer said the insurance lobby was able to insert language that would have undermined existing coverage for autism. While that language was ultimately struck from the legislation, the process created friction between disability communities. Lori Unum, who as a parent drafted an autism mandate law for South Carolina and is now CEO of the Council of Autism Service Providers, said she urges families to first make sure they've exhausted all avenues to secure the coverage they need. Schlepp said she thinks that if a number of states pursue mandates at the same time, advocates can work together for greater success. Schlepp said, quote, "It's so cool that states have an autism mandate. Now we want to see this expanded to all disabilities. We get to ride their coattails," end quote. Immigrants with disabilities could face more difficulty becoming U.S. citizens or permanent residents under new rules from the Trump administration. Under the so-called public charge rule, immigration officials can deny applications for green cards based on a person's use of government safety net programs, including Medicaid, said Elizabeth Lower Bosch of the Center for Law and Social Justice in Washington, D.C., a nonprofit, quote, "An individual with a developmental disability earns low wages and has low income. Their health condition and their use of benefits such as Medicare or Social Security, all separately held are all separately held against them. Overall, this rule is based on an outdated and false stereotype of people with disabilities as unable to contribute to society. The rule is set to go into effect on October 15th, but more than a dozen states have filed lawsuits in an effort to block its implementation. Prospective citizens have long been judged by their potential needs for assistance with food, housing, or health care, but the new rules expand the reasons a green card applicant can be turned away, adding Medicaid eligibility and a lack of funds to cover future medical need. Through the public charge rule, President Trump's administration, reinforcing the ideals of self-sufficiency and personal responsibility, ensuring that immigrants are able to support themselves and become successful here in America. Ken Cuccinelli, acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, said when announcing the rule last week. While Medicaid already has strict enrollment restrictions for non-citizens, disability and immigrant rights advocates said the new rules could have a chilling effect on anyone seeking government assistance. Advocacy groups, including the ARC and the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, are united in their opposition to the rule. Children are excluded from the new rule, meaning their participation in government assistance programs would not be used against them. Still, advocates say the rule discriminates against people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. According to Sam Crane, director of public policy for the Autistic Self Advocacy Network, quote, "Medicaid is a critical source of support for people with disabilities. Immigrants with disabilities are going to be unable to access health care, supports, and services that they need to live," end quote. Crane said there is a misconception that immigrants are taking Medicaid benefits away from citizens. There is no evidence to support that, she said, and any shortcomings or waiting lists are a result of insufficient funding. Healthcare providers in California reported a 42% increase in skipped medical appointments due in part to fears over the public charge rule, according to the Children's Partnership, a California-based group that advocates for underserved kids. The rule will also have an opposite effect than what's intended by preventing people from becoming more self-sufficient with assistance, Crane said. She said, quote, "It's basically saying that all people on Medicaid are burdens to society, and that's exactly the opposite message that we want to send, which is that all people have inherent worth and dignity," end quote. And finally, a passenger traveling with SkyWest Airlines over the weekend claimed crew members walked off the plane rather than accommodate his brother with autism, forcing all 75 people on board to exit the aircraft and wait 3 hours for another flight. Iomidi Isola vowed to take further action against SkyWest's connection carrier for Delta and several other airlines. He said he was flying from Detroit to Houston at the time with his mother, sister, and 21-year-old brother, Teo, who is, quote, "essentially nonverbal, making him unable to express himself. For his safety and the safety of those around him, it is important that he sit with a family member on flights," end quote. End quote. Isola said he and his family arrived at the gate only to learn that they were all seated separately. When they boarded the flight, a woman was quick to volunteer to switch seats with Teo for the two-hour trip, but a flight attendant quickly became enraged over the arrangement. She allegedly demanded that Teo take his original assigned seat, but Isola refused on his behalf, explaining to her his brother's condition and needs. Eventually, they spoke with a supervisor who seemed confused by the tensions building aboard the aircraft. After being delayed for nearly an hour, the flight attendant spoke with the pilot and pressed for both Isola's family and the woman who swapped seats with his brother to be booted from the plane. Airport security sided with Isola, telling the pilot that there was a safety issue and that the flight should resume, but he refused, and the crew exited the aircraft. As a result, everyone on board was forced to deplane and wait for a new crew to arrive. arrive. Isola said, quote, when the new crew came in, everything went smoothly, end quote. The crew has been grounded while the airlines continue to investigate the incident. And that's the news for this week. Oh, I want to get away. I want to fly away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to get away. I want to fly away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go and see the stars. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat, and I am joined by my guest on the phone today, Kish Bazzani, who is the new director of the Illinois Association of Micro Boards and Cooperatives. Very glad to have Kish on the program. Welcome to the show, Kish.
Happy to be here, Vicki.
So you've been on board for what? 4 months, something like that, a short
something
period
like
of time.
That.
You're just still in learning mode, but I am very impressed by your energy and your ideas and all the things that you have planned for the association. First of all, for those who aren't familiar, can you explain what a micro board is and what a cooperative is? Because that's kind of the basis for your work, right?
Absolutely, yes. Like you said, right now it is the Illinois Association of Micro Boards and Cooperatives. And we're slightly unique that in that states who have these types of organizations tend to have just micro boards and not, so we do both, which is a little different. But a micro board, the easiest way for me to explain it is it's actually like a think tank of champions utilizing their own networks and resources for the good of an individual with disabilities. So essentially a family might set up a board of directors surrounding a focus person, and that focus person being the person with disabilities. And like any 501c3 or organization, there are officers and board roles and all that surrounding how to make a best life for an individual. So a cooperative could be a group of micro boards, or it could be an organization in and of itself right there in your area. There's community choices, which I've been using in my job here as an example of what communities should strive to have. I think what's happening there is the best of the best. And I don't say that just because this radio program happens to be based in your area. It really is. It is a...
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, it's a group. And most of these cooperatives, as you know, or actually anything related to this sort of advocacy work, starts with a group of parents. So... And so many great things happen around a kitchen table or at a ballpark or at a bar or on a field or in the school playground or at a PTA meeting, whatever. And so it is a group of parents and families and self-advocates who I like to say are pooling their brain power and any resources they might have with funding that they have to create their own type of services, rather than having to rely solely on another service provider. Essentially, they can become their own service providers.
Right. And just to clarify a little bit, are they providing the same types of services that already exist in the world?
I'm going to say yes and no. Yes, in the sense that some of the traditional, you know, what are you going to do during the day? Like some people refer to that as a day program. Well, a cooperative isn't a cookie cutter. Say right there in your area, it's customized for the individual. So before somebody starts in a micro board or a cooperative, the first step is to have a path, which is a tool that's used called Planning Alternative Tomorrows with Hope. And it's actually a visual tool that identifies, with the help of a circle of support, somebody's hopes and dreams. And then you go through a series of steps and back it up to what it's going to take with the help of the circle of support to achieve those. So what makes a cooperative different and a micro board different is it truly is what I've been calling organic and authentic person-centered planning. It's planning a person's what they're going to do during the day, what they're going to do for their job, what they're going to do for recreation, where they want to live, based on what that person wants, not what is available within another organization, which is a tough thing here in Illinois, because a lot of service providers just simply don't have the resources or don't have a group home or don't have a spot available in a day program or something like that due to so many other issues in the state. I can also speak for my own son. I happen to also be a parent like you. My son is 21, and the first question somebody has asked us as he is exiting his transition program is, what day program are you putting him in? And I say, I'm not. We're going to create his day using our circles of support and the resources that we have available in terms of human resources and whatnot. Because we just can't see that for him as a good match for him. It wouldn't be a place where he would be set up for success and be able to grow and enjoy a full inclusive life. That's him. But that's the whole point. It is person-centered and what the person's hopes and dreams are.
Yeah, and I see as new families of younger children are growing up that they're not really accepting the status quo for folks in Illinois. If you're, you know, lucky enough, if you want to term it that way, to get a slot in a group home and going to a sheltered workshop or day program, is that really the quality of life that you want your child to have for the rest of their life? I don't think it's good enough for somebody without a disability.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. And it's as a parent, I actually had to this job, and I know you've had on your program information about the Council on Disabilities Program Partners in Policymaking.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these opportunities in the last year have really opened my eyes. As a parent, like, I think of the things that I just have done for my son, and then now I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should ask him if he wants to take tennis or, you know, whatever it might be, because he does have some expressive communication issues. So oftentimes I'm the one who's doing a lot of the talking for him, and I need to do more asking and listening. And so that's one thing, I think. And, parents have much more, I should say, the engaged parents. There's also, I'm seeing a lot of parents who, for whatever reason, and I've been there on certain days, just are very overwhelmed with the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it is overwhelming. And
It's overwhelming, it's confusing, it's complicated.
Yeah, it's like we need our own Google platform just for this, just for Illinois, because there's, and I'm sure other states would say the same, there's so much. I mean, I sent emails today about something regarding my son, because I've just gone full circle. Oh, you have to send it to this person, this person, this person, and I can't find the right answer. So now I just blanket everybody, but also a lot of parents, like I said, are overwhelmed and don't know where to start. Or at the end of the day, if they're also working, they're just tired. And I think that's why a path or setting up these more formalized circles are so important, because it does take a little bit of the pressure off a parent to know that there is support out there for them. And I'm not talking financial support. I'm talking
the think people. Tank idea.
Yeah, the think tank, and I'm talking just social capital and social support.
Mm-hmm.
We're terrible at asking for help. We're probably the worst.
Yeah,
because we don't feel like anybody can do it the way we do. And so I think that it's uncomfortable for some people, but once it's done, I mean, this weekend we had a meeting of the mind, so to speak, with several leaders in the state and self-advocates. And when I say leaders, they were great leaders, but we're not talking to CEOs. I'm talking more, you know, a CFO or the people who are out there really interacting with families. And we had the chance to hear some testimonials of what from different families of what this organization has done for them, specific to microboards and cooperatives and even the PATH process. It's life-changing.
Yeah, and it's so amazing, because what I've seen is that every single microboard and or cooperative is completely different from the next, because it's all based on the hopes and dreams of one person or a few people in the cases of the cooperatives.
Right. And I think the really important thing as an organization right now for us, as we try and figure out our next step, is that, as we know, in Illinois, we have thousands of people on a waiting list. And I've heard a couple of different numbers. So I'm going to say between 6,500 and 7,500 right now. I mean, there's close to 20,000 on a list. But right now, there's up to 7,500 people that we know of that are registered on the PUNS list who are seeking services. That means they're saying right now, I need services now.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have them because of the structure right now. And so those are the people that we really want to reach, to say there are some tools out there that can help you, especially while you're waiting. Because even when you get the notification to go to the next step for funding, that's the money part of it is great, to know that you have access to those funds, but it's not the be-all, end-all, because you still have to have some systems in place in order to make the best use of those funds. And
absolutely.
So that's where we come in, too, and that's why it's so important to be thinking in terms of planning at a much younger age, even before. I mean, we know there are people who know they're not even going to see any waiver funding or anything until, we're talking adults, until 2025. I've heard somebody who said it looked like 2026. That's daunting.
That's crazy.
Two choices. You have 5 years where you could crawl under the covers and cry, or as hard as it is on some days, get out there and start developing some systems via social capital and circles of support.
Bring a few friends together and have a conversation and do a person-centered plan. And you can do things without funding, for heaven's sakes.
Absolutely. Well, that's what a co-op is. Think about it. I mean, I first learned of co-ops, obviously. I've heard of electrical co-ops and fruit and vegetable farming type co-ops. But I remember when my children were young, we had a babysitting co-op. We didn't exchange money. We just exchanged time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very helpful. So that's sort of the thinking. And chances are there are people in the same situation. So it's just so much better to collaborate rather than to isolate, I think. the collaboration is key. And the other thing is, here in Illinois, we're very fortunate to have organizations like ours and the Arc of Illinois, and Centers for Independent Living, and a dozen other organizations I could talk about that do put on webinars. So if you can't go to a meeting at night, there might be a webinar to join and to record and to listen to later. We have a lot of resources available to us. So I don't think it's necessarily a lack of information. I think our state is very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
The work that I've been doing has very much opened my eyes. I happen to live in suburban Chicago, but the work is all over the state. And the rural communities, like where we currently have a project in Geneseo, which is near the Quad Cities, they need cooperative and micro boards, I think, more than anybody right now. And so I do see the diversity in resources throughout the state and more complications. But again, sometimes we have to look at these as opportunities too. What can we do to make it better?
And from my perspective, I think that this is going to take an army of Kish Pazanis.
Oh, it is. Because we are, I'm part-time 20 hours a week right now, because that's what the funding is, and the funding is set to run out at the end of the year. I mean, based on what the organization had in the coffers, because the funding has gone up and down during the years, and especially during the last administration, and so it takes a lot of time, as anybody knows, to kind of recuperate. It takes to you know, it's like falling down a hill. You got to get back up the hill. So, and then where we are now, not just get up the hill, you got to, you know, then you got to get on the ski lift. You know, you got to go even further.
Right. And so if anybody is listening and they have a resource and would like to see the Illinois Association of Micro Boards and Cooperatives come to their community, maybe mm-hmm. they could, you know, contact Kish and work with her to get something going, something real, something person-centered in their community. Wouldn't that be great?
It would, and we're seeing so much. This is a great state. We all complain sometimes, the weather and political things, but it really is a fabulous place to live. And these communities and these small communities that I have purposely gotten off the interstate so I could drive through some of the smaller towns have so much going for them. And so many of them do have community foundations or angel donors or things like that, that we don't want to have to say no. If somebody calls and says, I live in Galvin, Illinois, I really want to have a path. We don't have the manpower right now to get there.
Right.
But we don't ever want to have to say, no, we can't do it.
Well, Kish, we are almost out of time. Can you be sure and give contact information before we completely run out? Email and...
Yeah. My email or organizational email is inclusion@iambc.org. And our website is www.iambc.org. We're making some changes on there a little bit at a time, but it has a lot of the background information and a wonderful video that further explains what we do. We want it soon to be a wonderful resource where that's your go-to person to find out, or your go-to website to find out where to go.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Kish Pazani, Director of the Illinois Association of Micro Boards and Cooperatives.
Thank you.
No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down.